You're listening to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the DFS Karma Podcast Network. Now here's your host with the most, Jack Caparuccio.
What's that up in the sky? It's a bird? It's a plane? No, it's Super Mailbag. Welcome back to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the Karma Media Network. I'm your host, Jack Caparuccio, aka Clinic Cap on Twitter. This is episode number 8 of the No Cap Podcast. Today we're diving into the most important NFL news for week 3 and digging into the Super Mailbag again. If you want to see my starts, sits, and weekly rankings, head over to dfskarma.com to read up on them. If you want insights on Thursday Night Football player props from me, that article is already live for free at betkarma.com. If you need Dynasty help, feel free to join our Discord at dfskarma.com, and you'll get direct access to me and the rest of the experts with our Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass Plus. Head over to dfskarma.com to check out that deal in more detail. Let's get right into it. So for the redraft news for today, there's a couple things that I really want to get off the agenda here. Big Ben has reportedly had a pec injury. There's not a whole lot of detail on it right now, and there could be some possibilities that he might miss a game. I would be really concerned to see if it affects his throwing at all. We know that the Steelers' offense hasn't been good thus far this year, you know, or at least they haven't met expectations. So monitor that as the week goes on. It may be a concern for some of the pass catchers there. Trey Sermon has been concussed. He took one carry for the 49ers and got absolutely destroyed. We hate seeing players get hurt like that. Elijah Mitchell also hurt his shoulder and left the game. He came back in. And we have Jamichael Hasty with a high ankle sprain. So per the usual, 49ers running backs are getting banged up. 49ers players seem to get hurt at such a high rate, and I don't really know why. I'm not sure if it's something with field conditions or with the training staff. I don't know what it is. It could just be bad luck. But be monitoring this situation. Sermon, I wouldn't really expect to play this week. Elijah Mitchell, I would expect to play, and this is one of those cases where there aren't even really warm bodies around him at this point, so he could get the lion's share of the touches in that backfield, which would be really useful for fantasy, of course. You know that backfield is not one that has a workhorse very often, so Mitchell could be in a really good spot this week. But be aware that they've brought in the ever-so non-injury-prone Kerryon Johnson is on their practice squad, so they might activate him. I know they're looking around the league and working out other guys as well, so they'll bring other guys in. And knowing Kyle Shanahan and his Shanahanigans, he might, you know, give somebody the start over Elijah Mitchell. We have no idea what this guy's going to do ever. He never gives us some kind of real legit clues that we can follow for fantasy. Next news is Davis Mills is starting for the Texans because Tyrod Taylor is missing time with a hamstring injury. They say it could be multiple weeks. They say he could go on IR. He was actually doing quite well for fantasy and was a Konami Code quarterback with his rushing upside. So it does stink that he's going to miss time. With Davis Mills in the lineup, we don't really know what to expect. He had a little bit of run last week, but I would say outside of Brandon Cooks, I'm staying away from everyone else in this offense for now. Who knows? Davis Mills could be a lot better than we expect, and then he brings more fantasy relevant options. I'm not projecting that for his first week starting as a rookie, but we'll have to monitor that. So Zach Wilson threw 4 interceptions this week against the New England Patriots, and we all know that Daddy Bill in New England always owns rookie quarterbacks. He has for a long time. So I didn't think Wilson was going to be a smash play in this matchup, but let's talk about if there's some smoke or fire here. I think it's more smoke than fire. I think you have to expect rookie quarterbacks to struggle at some point. We've seen Trevor Lawrence throw multiple interceptions, and he was, you know, been regarded as the best quarterback prospect to come out since Andrew Luck. So if that guy's going to struggle, any rookie quarterback's going to struggle, especially against a defensive-minded coach like Belichick, who has so much experience against these guys. I think that this is more smoke than it is fire, because Wilson has had this propensity to try to push the ball down the field, try to make the big play, try to play hero ball. And Robert Saleh even said he needs to learn that it's okay to play boring. In the NFL, boring is okay. Boring wins games. Look at Mac Jones's performance on the other side of the football. Mac Jones played a boring game. He didn't push the ball down the field. He didn't take these huge risks, but who won the game? New England Patriots did. So I think Wilson is going to have to learn to tone it down a little bit and not always be forcing these plays. He's trying to be a gunslinger a la Brett Favre back in the day, but I think in the modern day NFL, he's going to have to learn some moderation. It's great to have those big plays, and it's great to be looking for those big shots to change the pace of a game, but you got to have the easy stuff first. You got to have the checkdowns. You got to have the intermediate stuff, slants. Go to that first and learn that and do well at that and then move on. So I think the smoke, I think Wilson will be fine the rest of the year. He might have other hiccups like this going forward, but in general, I think he'll be okay. So something that's concerning is the Cowboy committee that has emerged. We all know, if you've been watching the Dallas Cowboys games, that Tony Pollard has just looked better. He's looked better than Ezekiel Elliott. Let's be honest with it. If anyone's denying you otherwise, then maybe they haven't watched it, or maybe they're stuck to their Zeke workhorse take. It is concerning, okay? If you're a Zeke manager, it has to concern you, because this whole idea behind Zeke was that, oh, he's going to bounce back, the offensive line's healthy, Dak is back, he's going to have, you know, a workhorse role, so he's going to be top five potential running back, right? But if they're making it a true committee, and even as early as today, they said, you know, they see Pollard as 1A to Zeke's 1B. I read that report, you know, online today. So if that's the case, and that has to concern you, because if you have Ezekiel Elliott on your roster, you didn't just get him for cheap. He wasn't some third round pick that slipped. No, he was a first round draft pick. So when your first round pick that you expected to be a workhorse gets stuck in a committee, that stinks. That's like one of the worst case scenarios. So I'm not sure if this is completely true. We've seen it the last 2 weeks of, you know, Pollard having this big role. He was extremely fantasy relevant last week. But I'm not sure if, you know, Jerry Jones and the coaching staff just coming out and saying, yeah, it's a committee backfield, we love having this committee. I don't know how much to believe that, because why on earth would you say it? Why would you come out and tell the rest of your world your plan for your offense? So it's something to monitor. It's something to be concerned. You're obviously not taking Zeke out of your lineups, because even this last week he had like 17 points at full PPR, so he's fine. But if it's a true committee, it does take away some of his upside, and we have to acknowledge that. So just something to monitor going forward. Watch his snap rates, watch his usage rates in the passing game, and we'll go from there. Another injury news, Jarvis Landry to IR. We saw the injury happen this week. They thought maybe at first it'd be week to week, but they decided to put him on the short-term IR, which obviously stinks because OBJ hasn't played yet either. So in the short term, I'm thinking that if you are a manager of OBJ or Jarvis Landry, to pivot to some other options on the Browns, I would be looking to the waiver wire for Donovan Peoples-Jones, who has flashed some big playability. I think if he can gain more of a target share, that he will, you know, show out and why he was one of the most recruited prospects in the country when he got into the University of Michigan. I'm also expecting a slight bump for Austin Hooper, who could be more involved in the passing game with these two guys missing time. You know, we have to remember that Hooper was a great pass-catching tight end for the Falcons. He still has that skill set. They paid him a ton of money to come there and do it. So it's not like he can't do it. He just really hasn't had the target share to justify that yet. So be on the lookout for Austin Hooper. He's probably a great streamer for you while Jarvis Landry misses time, because his target share should go up either way. We also have the Josh Jacobs injury. We know he missed last week, but John Gruden is saying he's very questionable for this coming week, and I personally think that Josh Jacobs is dealing with some kind of turf toe injury. So monitor that. You might have to stash Peyton Barber. Peyton Barber mainly didn't do very well last week because the Steelers are a great run D. I think against a soft matchup that Peyton Barber probably could have some versatility if he falls in the end zone. And with how some people's teams are looking at running back, you could certainly do worse off the waiver wire than Peyton Barber. We also have to monitor Derek Carr's injury. It looked like a high ankle sprain, but they say he's probably going to go this week. It is encouraging that he came back in the game on Sunday, but I would still monitor this, because obviously if Derek Carr doesn't go, that does hurt the pass catchers. And Marcus Mariota is also hurt, so I'm pretty sure the pivot option there for that team is Nathan Peterman. And if you've ever watched Nathan Peterman, you know that that is a very sad option indeed to have. And my final bullet point for this segment is Saquon Barkley ready for liftoff? Now, I know I've talked about him last 2 weeks as a fade, and I didn't like his matchup. I didn't like him not having a full workload coming off the injury, and that they would ease him back in. But I think week three is the time. I think it's time. We watched him flash a little bit against the Washington football team. He had that big 40-yard run against a really good run defense. He didn't do much else other than that. He had like 8.9 points in full PPR. But you have to be encouraged by seeing that big playability, because that was a big concern that, oh, he won't have the same explosiveness. He'll lose a step, whatever it is. We have seen that that is not true. We saw him rip off a big run against an elite run defense. So this week, he gets the Atlanta Falcons. This is the perfect bounce back week for Saquon. And if you're not a Saquon manager, if somebody has Saquon in your league and is panicking on these last 2 weeks, and I can see why, if they're not, if they just assumed that he would have full workload and be full go right away, then go make an offer. Go get him. If you really like Saquon Barkley this year and you believe in his talent and his recovery and that this good matchup he'll perform, then this is the buy window. This is it. If he goes against the Falcons this week and drops 25 points, then you're not going to get him, because the people who invested in him likely had to give a first or second round pick to get him. So if they see any kind of life from him as an elite running back this week, he'll be off limits and trade offers. So try to go get him while you can. I really do think he's in a smash spot this week. So I'm not going to take too long in this, but I do have some waiver wire ads to go through. You can see the full waiver wire column over at dfskarma.com by Antonio. He gives you a full breakdown of each player, their roster ship rates, everything like that. He's really good at the waiver wire article, so I would highly suggest you read that free article. I mean, it's free. You might as well take 5 minutes to read it and be a better fantasy player. So my waiver wire ads this week are Sony Michel, because Daryl Henderson is questionable with a rib cartilage injury, and they're saying he's going to play or should play, but they don't know the severity of it yet necessarily. And Sean McVay has already declared Sony Michel to be the starter. So even if Henderson plays, he'll have a lesser role. So I'm getting stashing Michel on my team. It's not a great matchup against the Bucs, but if you're desperate, he could be, you know, a desperation flex play. You hope he falls in the end zone. Other than that, you might not want to put him in your lineup, but I would at least try and get him off the waivers. My next guy is Zach Moss. I do detail Zach Moss as one of my sits of the week on my column on dfskarma.com. You can go check that out. But I still think he's worth rostering long term. He's only 37.5% rostered because a lot of people panic dropped him after he was inactive week one. But we saw him come back last week and he fell in the end zone twice, thankfully, which salvaged his day. The rest of his day wasn't that great. He didn't have a ton of touches. But I still think he's worth a speculative add because the running back landscape is just so thin already. It's barren on the waiver wire. So I don't think he's a guy you're going to have to drop a whole lot of fab or waiver priority to get, but he could have some potential later down the season. Another guy is Michael Carter, who's 54.6% rostered. Now, he's a guy that might not be available in most leagues, but there are probably people who drafted him decently high, or at least relative to what his output has been, and dropped him by now. So go get him if he's dropped. He had a double-digit fantasy performance just last week, and the reports are he's taking over that backfield quickly. So I would get ahead of this curve before it's too late. There's a very real possibility you can just start Michael Carter in your flex this week and going forward if he gets the same utilization he did last week. So go get him now if he's out there on your waivers. Next guy that's an absolute must waiver is Rondale Moore. We've seen it the last 2 weeks. The first week was okay, like 9 points. Last week, he was a top 10 fantasy wide receiver. He was insane. We saw the explosiveness. We saw the connection with Kyler. And the craziest thing to me about Rondale Moore is his usage. He has like the fourth lowest usage in routes run in that wide receiver room, but he had the most points. It's absolutely absurd to see, but I think what's going to end up happening with Rondale Moore is he's going to get more and more and more and more and more usage every week. And the more and more is not a pun. It's just the best way I can put it. You know, I think eventually he's going to overtake Christian Kirk, AJ Green as that wide receiver two in Arizona, which if we've seen with Arizona and how pass happy they are, that's going to be extremely valuable. And even if he doesn't ascend to that role, he could be a weekly flex. He's the type of high upside guy you need your lineup to potentially win you a week. I mean, I'm sure if you put him in your lineup this week, he probably won you your matchup. So go get Rondale Moore. I'd be dropping as high as 20 to 25% on him because I really do believe in him. He's a guy that I've been stashing at the back of most of my redraft rosters for a long time now. So go get him. I'm also in on Henry Ruggs. We've seen it the past 2 weeks. He's had good performances. Now that changes a little bit if Derek Carr misses time, but I would still go get him on your waivers if you can. Next guy is Justin Fields because Andy Dalton is reportedly missing a couple weeks with a knee injury. So go get Fields. We've talked about it before of stashing that guy on your bench. So he's probably on a lot of rosters as a QB too, but maybe some people got desperate and they dropped him because they needed the roster space. And my last guy is Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater has looked like a different quarterback. I don't know if it's just me, but Bridgewater used to be this dink and dunk guy. He'd be like, you know, 5 yard eight out, 6 yard eight out. He just all these low average depth of targets. And he was seen as, you know, utilizing screens and slants and intermediate routes and drag routes. But now he's throwing deep at the highest rate in the league. It's insane. He looks like a different quarterback and he has good weapons on that offense. So go get Bridgewater. He's been great as a streamer and I think he might have season long viability. So my last segment here is the super mailbag. I'm bringing it back because it was popular last week, where I just take all the questions I find on Twitter, you know, if it's redraft or dynasty alike, and I try to answer as many of them as I can. So we're going to rapid fire through these. I will try my best not to ramble here. Here we go. This first question is from @DSMerns. They say, "Hey Jack, I need some help. I was offered JT and Tim Patrick for Mixon in half PPR. Any thoughts? Was planning on dropping James Conner for Madison, but I'd have to make a spot for Patrick." So at first glance, when I saw JT and Patrick for Mixon, I thought, oh yeah, that'd be a great smash trade, right? On paper. But the more I thought about it, the less I like it. I like the Mixon side of this, to be honest with you, and I'm not a huge Mixon guy. I was a advocate for taking him in the third round of your drafts, but I've never been this huge, you know, Joe Mixon truther. It's just not, I've never liked him that much. But if you look at his usage rates, he has, like, behind, I believe, Derrick Henry, he's second in the league for rushing touches. He's being used in a workhorse role. I looked at JT's snaps from this last week, and he was under 50% utilization. I just can't justify trading Mixon, who's going to get 90% plus of those running back touches, for a guy who's getting less than 50, no matter how talented that guy is. Tim Patrick's going to be great until Jerry Jeudy comes back, so I like him as a spot fill-in, but not as some significant piece. You want the best player in your trades, and I think in this case that Joe Mixon is the best player. This next one's from @KingJiggly. He asked, "Am I crazy for benching DeAndre Swift for Cordarrelle Patterson or Javonte Williams this week?" I know what the rankings are going to say. So I know what the rankings are going to say too, and they're going to say what I'm going to say, and that I would not bench Swift for Patterson. I think there's more of a case for Javonte Williams, but Javonte Williams still hasn't given you the pass catching upside that justifies benching Swift for him. The case of Patterson, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, is I don't think this is going to be consistent production. We have to remember Mike Davis is still there. Mike Davis still had like 14 PPR points. It's not like he just put up a stinker this last week and Patterson was the alpha RB1. Patterson had some breakaway plays, obviously, but this guy's been in the league for like 8 years now. I don't think this is going to be a consistent weekly production that you can bank on, and I'm certainly not benching DeAndre Swift, who's going to be the garbage time king in full PPR with the Lions, for that guy. So I would pass on this. I would leave Swift in your lineup. I think he's going to give you more consistent and higher upside on a week. This next question, there is no username, actually. It's just a blank tag. It says, "Are Derek Carr and Daniel Jones really top 10 QBs?" So over the course of this season, I don't think they will be. I think Derek Carr at some point will fall off. But I also think that we have to realize the Raiders' offense looks different. This Raiders team looks way different than it has in past years, and they just beat two pretty good opponents in a row. The Steelers are a little weak, but their defense is still really good. No one expected the Raiders to win that game. So they're beating good opponents. They're going deep a lot. They're being extremely aggressive. And if Derek Carr keeps pushing down the field like this for these 300-yard games and multi-touchdowns, he could stand like that. You know, he doesn't have the mobility to have that really high upside that we look for, but he could be a QB1 for the most of the season. In the case of Daniel Jones, I've always said with him that he's one of those unrealized Konami codes. He fumbles all the time. He's never really had all these great weapons, but he's almost had a 100-yard rushing game last week. If Daniel Jones keeps rushing for 40 or more yards per game and maybe throws a couple touchdowns in there, it becomes the case of Josh Allen light. Josh Allen has been the team's RB1. I think that Daniel Jones will fall off with some of his rushing once Saquon gets fully healthy and has a full workload. But we can't just say, you know, Daniel Jones is useless for fantasy, because he's always had this rushing upside. He had one of the fastest runs last season. You know, the run that he fell down and tripped over himself on, which was hilarious, but he still had a fast run. So Daniel Jones is one of those guys that people hate on because he's sloppy. He seems to always commit the worst turnovers at the worst time, but that stuff doesn't matter as much for fantasy. If he has the rushing upside, he might actually finish as a top 10 QB this year for fantasy, because that rushing upside at quarterback outweighs a lot of other things. This next question is from @_TPM_. They ask, "Should I spend 60% plus combined on Patterson and Rondale Moore to give my 0-2 team a chance?" So when you're 0-2, you're getting desperate. I get it. But as I touched on with Patterson, I don't think this is going to be consistent weekly production. I would like him less as a waiver ad this week than I did Elijah Mitchell last week, who people spent, some people, 100% of their budget on. So Patterson, I wouldn't go ahead and spend that much on him. I would try like the 10 to 15% range because I'm just not convinced yet that Mike Davis is just going to fall by the wayside and it's just Patterson's backfield. I don't think that's going to happen. But Rondale Moore, I'm all aboard that. If you need to spend 30% plus to get him, do it. Because I really do think this guy is the second most talented wide receiver on the team at this point. You can say what you want about Christian Kirk. You can say what you want about ancient AJ Green, who has looked better. But Rondale Moore has the highest upside on this team of a wide receiver not named DeAndre Hopkins. And he's attached to an early MVP candidate in Kyler Murray. So that's invaluable for fantasy. I'm going with Moore, but Patterson, I would pass on at that price range. Next question comes from at Sam Adams Analyst. They ask, why is CEH continuing to bring down my team every week? And to give you the simple answer for this, it's basically because he's not getting the high value touches. We're not seeing him get a bunch of goal line work. We're not seeing him convert on the goal line work he does get, which is what we saw last year. We're not even seeing him get a huge volume of passing work. The main passing options in this offense are Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. And the expectation for Clyde was always that, oh, he's the next Brian Westbrook, which was kind of the words out of Andy Reid's mouth that led us to this. Oh, he's going to get all these checkdowns. He's going to be an Austin Eckler type of running back. But he hasn't shown that. And it's not because he can't necessarily do it. He is a good pass-catching running back, but it's more of his usage. It's his utilization. The team is not using him as this checkdown option because Mahomes doesn't need to check the football down. He can push the ball down the field. He's got one of the biggest arms in the league and continues to push football down the field. So when you have that, you don't need to check down the ball 10 times a game to your running back. And I think that's most of the problem is that a lot of us expected him to have this pass-catching volume that just hasn't come to fruition. So I think it's because he's just not getting used how we thought he'd get used. This next question is from at AndyMac212. They asked what to do with CH in a standard redraft league. Some more CH questions. If you have Clyde in a redraft league and standard, I think you're kind of forced to hold. Honestly, it stinks. But at this point in the year, people have seen, you know, two uninspiring performances from him. So they're going to be looking to buying low. And the buying low aspect of it is fine if they're willing to offer you a player that is a locked-in starter in your lineup. Like if you can get an improvement at wide receiver and a significant one, then yeah, you can trade them. But I think what's going to happen more often than not is if you put CH up on the block in your league, people are just going to come in with these stupid low offers and they'll likely get you less points than even Clyde will. So I would just hold for now. If you're really looking to get rid of him at some point, wait for him to fall in the end zone or have some kind of pass catching utilization in a game, and then you can look to sell. This next question is from at Torier Gaucher. They asked, I am thin at running back. My running backs are Najee Swift, AJ Dillon, and James White, and good at wide receiver. Ridley, Jerry Jeudy, Ayuk, Tyler Boyd, Rondale Moore, Mooney, and Myers. Would you drop Myers to pick up Cordarrelle Patterson, JD McKissick, Michael Carter, Zach Moss, or Damian Williams? So one, I don't think you're as thin at running back as you think you are. Najee and Swift, I think by the end of the season, will finish as fantasy RB1s if you're in a full PPR format. That's just what I think about those two players this year. Even though Najee's been really hyper inefficient so far, he's got the volume. AJ Dillon will have standalones some weeks. And James White in full PPR has been on a tear. He's been great. He should be in your lineup. And with your wide receiver group, I don't think you're good at wide receiver. I really don't. I don't want to offend anybody with this. But Jerry Jeudy's on IR. Brandon Ayuk has not been usable and has been in the doghouse or hamstring issue or whatever it is. And you cannot start him. I repeat, do not start him until you see some life. You see some usage on the field. You see like a 10-point performance. Then you can start thinking about it. So we knock off Jeudy, Ayuk. You're at Tyler Boyd, who's a safe option, but he doesn't have a huge amount of upside. Rondale Moore, we talked about, is upside. Mooney has upside, I think, with Fields and then Myers. But you don't have a locked-in wide receiver two, in my opinion. You have a locked-in RB1, RB2. So in this case, I would hold. Maybe you can drop Myers for Michael Carter. I think that might improve your team a little bit. But I also don't think you're as strong at wide receiver as you think you are. And I would be trying to make some moves there to improve that depth. Because if you lose one more guy, if you know Boyd has something happen or anybody else, then you might be stuck. So I would want as much depth as I could at wide receiver so that I can rotate that wide receiver two based on matchups and not be stuck for a week. So That's just my thoughts on your roster. Next question comes at D4Really. Rondale Moore or Cordarrelle Patterson? Who would you pick up in a standard league? If you've been listening so far, you know the answer. Rondale Moore. Next question comes from at MattyG1996. It's a two-parter. They asked, full PPR redraft league, I'm eyeing up a trade of Deebo Samuel for either Gibson, Carson, or Taylor. I have Zeke, Najee, Pollard, and Sermon at running back, so I think I need some help there. But I have great wide receivers this year in D-Hop, Amari Cooper, AB, Deebo, Jamar, Sutton, and Gabriel Davis. What's your view on those potential trades? So I am a fan of selling high on Deebo in general because he has struggled to stay healthy. I think at some point this year he's going to get nicked up and miss some time. That's usually what happens with him because he's got so many soft tissue injuries over the years. So if you can get somebody to trade you Deebo or to trade away Deebo for Antonio Gibson or Jonathan Taylor, I'm absolutely taking that trade. I'm less interested in Carson, even though he had two touchdowns this last week and he was really good, because I think Gibson and Taylor still have that top 10 running back overall finish in their range of outcomes this year. I talked about Taylor's utilization, so I would lean Gibson a little bit, but not a ton, because we've also seen him get phased out of the pass catching game. So you can flip a coin, either Gibson or Taylor. They're ranked similarly for me, so if you can swing that, I would absolutely do it. Next question comes from at the Burberry Boss. They asked, 1 point PPR redraft, is it time to trade AB while he retains some value from week one, or continue to hold and start and hope week two was just an outlier? Target share scares me, but big play potential is high. Is he just touchdown dependent? So in general with AB, I've talked about this all offseason. I think that for me, he was the guy I want in that wide receiver room. He was the one with the lowest ADP and one I thought had the greatest value because of his back 6 weeks of last year with Tom Brady and the playoff performance with Tom Brady and that week one performance with Tom Brady like we saw. I think week two is more of an outlier. I think that AB is going to be just fine. I don't believe he's a touchdown dependent guy. AB has shown to be an elite separator and route runner in his career, so I think he can have those games where he has, you know, 5 to 8 targets and he catches most of those. He'll be fine. His spike weeks will obviously come when he has the touchdowns, but that's almost any player you talk about. You know, with running backs, if they have 20 carries for 100 yards but no touchdowns and no catches, they still have 10 points. And on paper, it looks like a terrible outing, but when you look at the box score, they actually had a good game. So I wouldn't panic about AB just yet. You likely got him at a great value in your draft. I would hold on to him because I think more often than not, he's going to be a valuable flex play for you. So hold the course on AB. Next question comes from at LoganBlack_FF. They ask, what do I do with Trey Sermon? My IR is occupied by Michael Thomas. So let me start with saying I don't think Trey Sermon can actually qualify for your IR in the first place unless it just counts any player that's hurt, because he's not on IR. So I think this is more of a moot point. I would hold Trey Sermon because you can't move him to your IR. And I'm certainly not dropping Michael Thomas off my IR. He's a stash until he plays. This next question comes from at WillRamsey34. They asked, out of the three in a redraft league, half PPR, who would you look to trade? Mike Davis, Tyson Williams, or James Robinson? This one was tough for me, honestly. When I first saw it come in, I was torn because Mike Davis obviously didn't have the greatest week. Tyson Williams, obviously, he's got the committee backfield, but what backfield isn't a committee at this point? And then you have James Robinson. I think the answer for me is James Robinson. I would trade him away if you could, because Urban Meyer has just shown this insistent quality where he needs to get snaps to Carlos Hyde. He has to do it. I don't know if it's a former Buckeye thing or what, because he just keeps getting Carlos Hyde involved when James Robinson is the best running back left in that backfield. And James Robinson was so valuable last year because he had like 90% plus of the running back touches. So I didn't ever think that was going to happen again this year. But with Robinson, you still have some of that perceived value from last year. You still have the, oh, he was a top 5 running back last year, I'll trade for him now, probably in some of the eyes of some of the other managers in your league. So I would try to trade Robinson away because I think he probably still has the likeliest highest name value in your league, and because I'm really concerned about his usage going forward. This last question comes from at JoeBlow52467902. You guys got to shorten up these usernames. They are not easy to get off the tongue. They ask, start Cordarrelle Patterson or Tyson Williams? Like I said earlier, I'm not convinced this Cordarrelle thing is a weekly bankable start. if he does this again this week, then we'll go from there. I'll eat my words on it. But I think Tyson Williams is the play here because he's shown he's still the most explosive back in that offense that's left. Latavius Murray is effective, but he's not the explosive back he once was. And I don't think he was ever that explosive, to be honest. And Tyson Williams has shown he's getting the limited pass catching work that's there for running back. So for me, this is an easy answer. I would go Tyson Williams. That's it for today's show. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at ClinicCap. And if you like the show, be sure to like and subscribe or follow the show anywhere podcasts can be found so you never miss an episode. And leave a quick review if you'd be so kind. If you want to directly ask me questions about fantasy football, sports betting, dynasty leagues, or life in general, head over to dfskarma.com and join our free chat room where you can talk to me nearly 24/7, 365. If you want even more fantasy help and access to our proprietary tools, you can get our Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass today over at dfskarma.com. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the No Cap Podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review anywhere a podcast can be found.